Today we are observing the Divine Disappearance Day of Sri Srimad Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. He left this world on this date, yesterday, 4 years ago, in the year 2005. So we shall read one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam about the disappearance of the spiritual master, and then we shall discuss more specifically about His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Text 48. Utishta, Utishta, Raja, Rishe, Imam, Udadi, Mekalam, Tasyubhya, Chatra, Bandubhya, Bibhyatim, Patum, Arhasi. Utishtutishta Rajarshe, Imam Udadime Kalam, Tasyubhya Kshatra Bandubhyo, Bibhyatim Patum Arhasi. Utishtutishta Rajarshe, Imam Udadime Kalam, Dasyubhya Kshatra Bandubhyo, Bibhyatim Patum Arhasi. Utishta, please get up. Utishta, please get up. Rajarishe, O saintly king, Imam, this earth, Udadi, by the ocean, Mekalam, surrounded, Dasyubhya, from the rogues, Kshatrabandubhya, from the unclean kings, Bibhyatim, very much afraid, Patum, to protect, Arhasi, you ought. Translation. O best of kings, please get up. Get up. just see this world surrounded by water and infested with robes and so-called kings. This world is very much afraid, and it is your duty to protect her. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Whenever an acharya comes, following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representative, he establishes the principles of religion, as enunciated in the Bhagavad Gita. Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Religious principles begin from the time one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord. One executes the religious principles by rendering devotional service, specifically the 9 items like hearing, chanting, and remembering. Unfortunately, when the acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage and immediately begin to introduce unauthorized principles in the name of so-called swamis, yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. Actually, human life is meant for executing the orders of the Supreme Lord. And this is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9:34. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi yuktvaivam atmanam matparayana. Engage your mind always in thinking of me and become my devotee. Offer obeisances and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. The main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, to become his devotees, to worship the Supreme Lord, and to bow down before him. The acharya, the authorized representative of the Supreme Lord, establishes these principles. But when he disappears, things once again become disordered. The perfect disciples of the acharya try to relieve the situation by sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master. At the present moment, practically the entire world is afraid of rogues and non-devotees. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is started to save the world from irreligious principles. Everyone should cooperate with this movement in order to bring about actual peace and happiness in the world. Translation again. O best of kings, please get up. Get up. Just see this world surrounded by water and infested with rogues and so-called kings. This world is very much afraid, and it is your duty to protect her. This section of Srimad Bhagavatam describes a king and his wife who had entered the Vanaprastha ashram and gone to the forest to perform austerities and realize God. And at a certain stage, the king left his body. It became clear by the symptoms that the king had left his body. And so his widow began to cry piteously in the forest over the departure of her husband. And Srila Prabhupada, following the previous acharyas, explains in the purport that figuratively the king is the spiritual master, and the widow or wife of the king is the disciple of the spiritual master. So here the widow is praying for her husband to get up and protect the world from rogues and so-called kings. Of course, it turned out that he actually had left his body, and that he would not return to his body. He would not return in the same form in which she had known him. But still, the principle of being protected by the instructions of the acharya continues even after the disappearance. And the instructions in essence are that one should surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and become his devotee, manmana, always think of him, worship him, and bow down to him. It is interesting that in the purport, Srila Prabhupada states, "It is the acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord." We present the philosophy, or the acharya presents the system, but it is also his duty to induce people to actually follow. And thus the acharya thinks of the ways and means by which he can induce people to surrender unto the Supreme Lord. One example that is prominent in our line is that of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a teacher in Navadvip, but his own students misunderstood him and criticized him. So Lord Chaitanya thought, as long as they disrespect me, as long as they criticize me, they will not be able to be delivered. So he thought deeply. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that he considered deeply what to do about the situation. And after due consideration, he decided to accept the renounced order of life, to take sannyas. Because in Vedic culture, everyone in every varna and ashram offers respects to a sannyasi. And Srila Prabhupada explains that every acharya must think of the ways and means by which he can propagate his mission. So His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, following in the same line, also considered how to induce people to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in doing so, like every acharya, he preserved the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, but he adjusted the presentation to attract people and induce people to actually take up the process of Krishna consciousness. When I first heard of some of Bhakti Tirtha Swami's preaching, specifically to members of the black community, I was a little surprised because I'd never heard anyone preach like that. I mean, Srila Prabhupada, at least superficially, never preached like that. So I was a little surprised and I wondered what was actually going on. But then I had the opportunity to visit Maharaj's institution in Washington, D.C., IFAST, the Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology, and meet some of the devotees who had come to Krishna consciousness by his preaching. And I was extremely impressed by them. Extremely impressed. They're very intelligent, sincere, competent, respectful. They were just wonderful. It was just so nice to be there with them. In fact, as it was, I had gone there with His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami. And, you know, after attending the morning program and seeing the devotees there, seeing the organization, we had breakfast, well, and later lunch, with His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And he explained some of his unique approach. And he told us that he had people chanting 16 rounds and following the four principles, you know, engaging in the service of Krishna and the worship of Krishna for months, if not years, before they even knew that such a thing as the Hare Krishna movement existed. So I thought, wow. Well, how did he do that? How does he do that? But as it is said, And Prabhupada himself made many innovations compared to his god brothers, and some of his god brothers criticized him. They thought he wasn't following strictly, or he was deviating. They had certain misconceptions about Srila Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada would say, phalena parichiyate. You have to judge by the result. And we could see the result of Bhakti Tirtha Swami's preaching at IFAST. The people who had joined, and the caliber of the people, and the way in which they had been trained and engaged. It was striking. In 1980, the Sri Sri Radha Radhanath Temple of Understanding in Durban, South Africa opened. It's a beautiful temple, in a way similar to Bhakti Tirtha Swami's preaching, in the sense that it contains some of the basic elements of a Vedic temple, with the domes and so on. But at the same time, it used unique materials and it had a unique design. The basic elements were there, but so it was like a combination of traditional temple architecture and modern design with modern materials. So anyway, South Africa was in the under the regime of apartheid at the time, and as Srila Prabhupada said at the first Bombay Pandal, this is the real United Nations. So we had, they had their categories in South Africa. Whites, then they had Chinese, then they had Indians, and then they had Africans, in that order of gradation. But Chinese were a minority, but there were some, so they also figured in the system. So we wanted to show that and it's a fact. It wasn't like a stage production, but we wanted people to see that we had Europeans and Indians and Africans all living together in harmony and serving together, with Krishna at the center. And the construction of the temple was a major achievement. And very big people in South Africa came for the opening ceremonies from these three main categories. So we had the mayor of Durban. He was white. And in the apartheid system, they had the idea of allowing a degree of self-government to the Indians. So they had their own legislative assembly and everything. And they Yeah, they manage their own affairs in relation to, you know, public welfare and utilities. Of course, you know, the military was in the hands of the whites, but so we had the head of the Indian Legislative Assembly, and then we had Chief Buthelezi. He was the head of the government of the blacks in KwaZulu, and he was also like a hereditary chief, royal in the royal family of the Zulus, and the Zulus are the largest tribe in South Africa. So of course we wanted to have a prominent African preacher. We had African devotees, but not of that caliber, so we invited His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami to come. And I was deputed to receive him when he arrived, and he came wearing I think a Nehru jacket and a different type of cap, not the usual traditional sannyas dress. But he was very effulgent, very bright, very friendly. And of course he did speak very powerfully at the Pandal, I think. It was a huge tent, I think maybe 20,000 people came. It was very impressive, very impressive. And at that time, we had some quite intimate personal talks. Somehow I felt I could really trust him and open up to him. He was extraordinarily perceptive, extraordinarily perceptive. I mean, he had a sense of what was going on. I think just by looking at people, he just understood. So after he arrived, he wanted to take a ride around the city. I didn't accompany him. We were very busy, you know, preparing for the opening ceremonies and receiving guests and so on. But when I met him and spoke with him, he'd figured out the whole situation in South Africa. Now, of course, when you hear what he said, you might think, well, you wouldn't, I mean, because you're devotees, you wouldn't be so foolish or offensive, but someone might think that he was in the bodily concept of life, but he wasn't. He saw everyone as spirit soul, but he also saw that they are embodied within, you know, a gross physical body and a subtle body or mind. And he could see how their you know, gross and subtle bodies were working. He could see how the material nature was working, and that enabled him to see how to get through to them. You know, he could understand their mood and mentality, and that enabled him to see how to reciprocate with them in a way that they would appreciate him. So I'll repeat some of the things he said, and I hope you'll I'm sure you'll understand them in the right way. So he said that there are many different tribes in Africa, and they have different natures and different levels of intelligence. He said the West Africans are the most intelligent. And most of the blacks in America are from West Africa. And so people in America have the idea that blacks are as intelligent as the blacks they find in America. But he said, actually, it's not true. And then he said, the East Africans are the least intelligent. And therefore, it's hard to make them devotees. But the West Africans are much more intelligent, and therefore it's much easier to make them devotees. And of course it's true, he made so many devotees in West Africa. And in East Africa, well, there are so many stories, some humorous stories, how when Prabhupada came to Nairobi, they gave his laundry to the devotees to wash, and you know, they hung the laundry on the line, and then when it was time to collect the cloth, it was all missing. Nobody knew where Prabhupada's cloth went. And then the next morning in the temple, they saw on one of the devotees, there's this top piece, and all different pieces of his cloth were turning up on the the bodies of different devotees. So so Maharaj said that, you know, so then about the South Africans, he said they're a little more intelligent than the East Africans, but they're not as intelligent as the West Africans. So he said, you will be able to make some devotees, but not many. You know, it won't be easy. And that's also proven to be true. Then well, I'll mention this, it's a sort of personal, but anyway. You know, that was a time when you know, it was like an issue about more devotees becoming gurus. And you know how devotees talk in ISKCON. So anyway, it was coming up about me. And I didn't I didn't feel qualified, and I didn't want to do it. I just didn't want to do it. Somehow I discussed it, you know, it came up with Bhakti Tirtha Swami, and I really don't know how he gets these things. I think he talks to people. I think he gets things from talking to people as well. He'd only been there for a couple of days. But anyway, he said, I proceeded to explain what I considered to be my disqualifications. And then he said that the thing about me is that I really care about the devotees. And the most important thing for a devotee is to feel that his or her guru really cares about him or her and isn't just concerned about you know, like getting service out of them. So he thought, you know, he thought that was an important qualification. And then I said, well, you know, what about this, you know, accepting the sinful reactions of the disciples? He said, well, you know, I deal mainly with Africans, and they really generally, we're talking in generalities, but you know, they really come like from the lower modes, really a lot of lust and greed, and have engaged in many sinful activities. So, you know, sinful reactions is really something I have to be concerned about. But here you're preaching mainly to Indians. They come from more pious backgrounds, so I don't think that should be such a big issue for you. Anyway, some talks. And then we'd meet in Mayapur for the annual GBC meetings and discuss many interesting talks in Mayapur. We had one talk. I actually thought of it the other day when we were talking about Varnashram Dharma being like a social net to catch people, safety net. The idea of a safety net is like in circuses, they'll have a tightrope, I forget the names of these things, but like a, they'll have this very high rope or string or wire, and the artist will like walk across it, but it's like it's so thin they could easily fall down, or like trapeze artists, they like swing from one to the next and they're just flying in midair. So they'll have a safety net. So just in case, you know, they fall, they'll be caught in the net. They won't fall to the ground and be shattered or broken. So, you know, Varnashram Dharma is sort of like the safety net, like we were saying in relation to marriages, that if the husband and wife are Krishna conscious, that's enough. You don't have to worry so much about material compatibility because their Krishna consciousness will prevail over all else. And each will be in the mood of being the servant of the servant. See, the other is servant of Krishna, be in the mood of being the servant of the servant. But if the couple or if one of the partners is unable to keep up the standard of Krishna consciousness, or you know, either or both are not of the proper standard of Krishna consciousness, then you know it's better if materially they're compatible in terms of, you know, culture, background, education, various qualifications. Now, in Mayapur, I was having this discussion with His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, because, you know, we had this phenomenon of devotees sort of racing ahead, you know, to reach the goal, and then stumbling and falling. So he gave the example, and then others not going so quickly, but not falling down, just sort of advancing more gradually. So he gave the example of climbing up a pole. He said, you climb up a pole, you're going straight up. You're going straight to the top. And you can do that if you have the strength. But the difficulty is You know, if you lose your grip, you fall all the way down. The other approach is, you know, you take like he gave the example of a winding staircase that would wind around the pole. it's a much slower and more gradual process. But at least with the staircase, you know, you take one step. It's not a big step. You don't go very, it's not like just going up like firemen. But you are going up and you're not going back down. So even if you're not going very quickly, but at least you're making progress. And it's not that one in any absolute sense is better than another. Of course, if you can go straight up like that, if you have the strength, that you'll reach the top faster. But there's greater risk. So I guess maybe, I mean, I did want to speak about his last year, which was very significant. But I'm thinking now maybe we could give others a chance to speak, and then I could come back to discussing his last year. And the others who speak can discuss, I would say, any period. From when they met him or first heard about him up until the end, and then I'll speak about, well, that's my, yeah, then I'll speak about his last year. Maharaj? We're happy if you're happy. Well, we have Advaitacharya Das. He's a disciple of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, and he was with Maharaj at the end. And you can speak in whatever way you want. You could address your Guru Maharaj like an offering, appreciation, prayer, and we'll see who else would like to contribute, and then I'll pick up.